Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
And welcome, folks, to another edition of the Michigan Football Breakdown, focused on the offense with Al Borges. And how about that? Right on. Al Borges did not have any technical difficulties this week. His light is right. I don't know, Al, you've never glistened so much on camera, man.
I know, Sam. I'm a little bit of a Neanderthal when it comes to this technological stuff. So if you have to troubleshoot something, I'm in trouble, man. But you know what? We're up and running. And Sam, are you ready to be eloquent and effervescent?
Always. When am I not, Al? When am I not?
Don't get me started on that. But I'm just
Lions,
saying.
Especially with how the Lions. I mean, the Lions and Michigan being good at the same time.
The Lions, Sam.
This
the
is a rare occurrence in my lifetime, Al. You know that, right?
My goodness gracious. I watched the game the other night. And I'm a newly born Lion fan. I mean, I grew up a 49er fan. Still am. But of all the Detroit teams, that's the one that I've clung to. And I live and die, and now I know what you guys have been dealing with for years sometimes. But this year, looking good, Sam. So far, so good.
I want to send a sincere thanks to those of you who not only support this show, our breakdown that we're about to jump into full bore, but support our film studies. Man, I looked at the fundraiser to fund the film studies. We make no money on those film studies, just so you know.
Make sure they know, Sam. Make sure they know.
Hey, man, they hawk every week. I give the disclaimer. Like, if those of you watch the film studies, like, why does Sam always say that? Because they check. You know, the copyright folks, they check to make sure we aren't making money on those videos. That's why I say it all the time. But
yeah, we're kind of at our listeners' mercy a little bit on those.
I appreciate you indulging me for letting me repeat that all the time, just to assure those who watch such things. Also appreciate those of you who supported the PayPal fundraiser, which we have up and running. We'll have it in the comments. So if you want to check that out, we'll post it in the comment section as we get rolling, and certainly after the broadcast. But Al, 2 weeks in the bag for the Maize and Blue, 2 weeks in a row, J.J. McCarthy. There is not. This is my contention, Al. You've coached quarterbacks and you've coached football. I haven't. But I've watched enough to know and have seen other quarterbacks this season to say that even though they have gaudier stats in the Pac-12 and the ACC, no quarterback in the country is playing better right now than number 9, J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, and I think the guys that he's played against would attest to that, because I think the UNLV – coach actually made a point of that after the game. He just does it. He throws 25 passes and he's out of the game. And by the end of the third quarter, I mean, the numbers are only going to be so good. They are very gaudy when you consider how much he's playing. He threw 25 balls, hit 22 of them in this game. And I don't know, man, that's not easy to do on air. Okay. Never mind put a defense out there, but that's, you know, you can compile some pretty good numbers sometimes and really not be playing as well as a lot of people might think. But this kid has really taken a step. His decision-making process, his footwork within the pocket, whether it's a run-up throw, a back-out throw, or just a structural hitch throw. And in this game, he even threw a plant throw where he came back and threw a skinny post time route, spun it right between defenders. Decision-making process is good. You saw more checkdowns in this game. And as they see Michigan play more, Sam, they're going to practice those play passes and getting their butts out of there after they see the ball hasn't been exchanged. So there'll be some checkdowns, but you can see those checkdowns. Man, when those defensive players have their backs to you, when they're blowing back to stop those digs and all that, and you check the ball down to a playmaker like Corum or Donovan Edwards, man, those can gain as many yards as if you threw it down the field. So his game, he's at the top of his game. It'll get tougher, but I think he's equal to it. He's been in the arena now, and I think he knows what he's doing. He's comfortable. I think the team has taken on a little bit of his personality with regard to work ethic and toughness. And I think, you know, sky's the limit. You know, I think the expression they use today is he has a high ceiling. Okay. I don't know what, I'm not sure what that is, but I think his ceiling is pretty high.
Yeah, man. I'm curious, and we'll get to your broad brush here coming up, but Sharone was back, right? I felt the difference in that, you know, not you know, kind of difference between, Kirk calling the game and Sharone calling. That's not what I'm talking about. I felt the difference from game one to game two. It really felt like to me, Al, novice observer, that Sharone went into this game saying, we're going to work the perimeter run game. Because it just, from the jump, from the first series of the game, you could feel that emphasis. And as a play caller, I'm wondering if you felt the same thing.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. They only ran, I think, two or three dual plays the whole game. So they were going to run the stretch, the fly with a lead blocker, and a reverse. They were going to get the primary way they were going to get the ball outside. And they weren't going to wait a quarter or two to do it. They were going to come out and try to establish some of that stuff from the get. And they had some success with it. They had a few bad plays. But for the most part, it wasn't bad. And it helps them for the future because these teams are playing duo buster defense. Okay. They're running defenses designed to stop that play, knowing that if they look at video from the last year, that is the primary run play that Michigan attacks the defense with. So you're seeing some very similar defenses. Either they're in their package or they're stealing from the people that they've watched Michigan play against, and they're making it as difficult as they can to run that play. So there has to be a counter to that. And I think instead of waiting in this game, they came out and did it from the get-go.
All right, so let's get to your broad brush observations. 35-7, the Wolverines bested UNLV. Play caller Al, offensive coordinator. I guess I should give your credentials. He was OC for Michigan. He was OC for Auburn in the undefeated year. He was OC for UCLA. He was OC for Oregon. He was OC for Boise State.
Sam.
I'm laying them all out, Al.
I know. Sam, it just makes it look like I can't hold a job. But when I didn't go anywhere, I had the same job my whole life. I mean, I don't know if that's good or bad. But anyway, all that aside, they're not running. They ran the ball better. Okay, they had 179 yards rushing, but it's still not to their standard. Okay, they need to run the ball better, and I'm sure they're the first ones to say that. But that's 179 yards is respectable when you consider everybody's playing so hard on the run and they're giving McCarthy all those downfield throws. It happened again, Sam. It looked like deja vu all over again, you know, Yogi Berra. But 492 yards is nothing to sneeze at. That's a pretty good game. 7-for-12 on third down, and that's a lot of the J.J. McCarthy show. He's bailing them out of some third downs, and as long as you can keep that thing, you know, within 7 yards, and even he's even doing it when it's more than that, but you keep that thing 6-7 yards or less, he's going to get the first down more often than not. And he's just proven that. 23 first downs. Your goal is usually about 25, but 23 is good. That's a good game. You know, I thought they did a nice job there. And again, they possessed the ball 31-06. And like I say, with Michigan, time of possession is a factor. They are not a fast offense team, so they want to have the ball more than UDEP. The offensive line was very similar performance to the week before, maybe a little bit better in some areas. They continue to do a wonderful job with their tight end package. They're in a little bit of a dilemma with that now, and we'll talk about this later, I know, is are you going to play that second tight end, or are you going to find a way to maybe get Donovan Edwards in there in a two-back with three wides, you know, or something like that, or however you want to do it. I mean, there's a million ways to do it. But using those tight ends, I just love it. But it could cost playing another guy. So you may find, you know, they may find a way to work maybe a few less plays with two tight ends there, a few more plays with Donovan in there as a second back. So, but overall, they did what they had to win. I think they had a turnover when it was irrelevant. So I didn't see that as a big deal. It was a good game and a good win, and they were never threatened, you know, and they continue to roll. I think they're right on schedule.
So one of the things that, you know, we've been talking about, the run game compared to where it was last year. I mean, they have many of the same components, but there are some new components. The new components are along the offensive line. And so let's talk about that for a second. First of all, Drake Nugent seems like he has lived up to the hype. Have you gotten that impression on the film?
I grade these guys for, you know, every week for the last 3 or 4 years. And I've waited 2 games, and I think I got him with 2 minuses in 2 games. I mean, he's Olu type. You know, I had a comment. Someone asked us, how can you compare it to a Outland Trophy winner or a Remington winner? I said, well, I'm not going to, like I said, I don't annoy anybody they played for a while. But don't be a bit surprised if this kid isn't up for those same type of accolades. Mm-hmm. He may be in it because he's very good player. Great second-level blocker. Tough to move on the line of scrimmage and, you know, being the center such, you do get a lot of help, but I'm not sure how much he needs. He has not shown any vulnerability, I should say, to pass protection issues. I mean, he seems to be doing fine there. And he got out in a reverse. He looks like he can run. I mean, the kid is, he's played a lot of football, you know, and you can tell, and he's a good fit for them, you know. Keegan and Zenter are both one step better, if you will. I think they were good, solid players a year ago, but I think they're still there, you know. Where some of the growing pains are taking place, if any, is at the tackles, although both of them are very capable players. Hinton, who is, you know, he's still in the run game. He still has a play or two where the guy come off him on a reach play, or he wasn't able to cut off a 3-1 time. It cost him a tackle for loss. But he's capable of doing all that. I mean, he's a good player, and he's very good in pass protection. I don't see any issues there. And through 2 games, Barnhart has done very well. Again, I mentioned last week I had my doubts whether he could play left tackle, but so far, so good. And I think that he's good. The big thing now, though, Sam, is remember, with Drake – or no, I'm sorry, Nugent, Hinton, and Barnhart at left tackle rather than right – you still got some chemistry issues, okay? Because there's new guys, okay? And offensive line is all about playing in concert, making the calls, taking the right steps that close those gaps off so people can't penetrate our zones, you know, and making sure the communication is straight when people are stemming fronts or moving on, which you're doing a lot of, right? You're getting a ton of movement. Very few of these teams are sitting still. Very few of these teams are still targets. So it takes some chemistry for those five to work. And I think as they play more, they'll play better. So, like I said, I think for the most part, they're on schedule.
Yeah, I definitely reacted to in the run game there being some, there being some instances where they weren't as stout as you want them to be. And it was definitely thinking about the tackle position and thinking about it with it from the context or within the context of the competition at tackle, right? Mm-hmm. And so yeah. Sharon addressed this in the press conference this week, said, look, we look at film. Like, we base it on who's practicing the best and looking at film. And so what I think we can infer from that is what we see in the run game, if we think that it lends itself to more competition at the position, that there isn't, that the competition seems to be, for the time being, kind of decided on Carson and on Miles. What it says to me is those guys are ahead in pass pro. And if you look at them in pass pro, Al, both guys have been really, really good.
Yeah, there's been no issues. Yeah,
there have been no issues in pass pro. This has been mostly a discussion about run blocking. Mm-hmm. And the belief must be that while it needs to get better, it will get better with more reps. And then you got Ladarius and you got Trente right there to keep pushing them. At least that's the feel I get from it from the outside looking in.
I think that's accurate. And just remember, the coach, in particular line play, they know. I mean, they coach those guys every day. They know how they tick and what makes them tick and who works together the best. You know what I mean? They know things that we don't know. And unless you're front and center, you're with them all the time, and they make the best judgments. A coach has the best judgment. So there's a reason all those guys are in there. Okay. I mean, you can nitpick certain plays and say, well, look, he didn't do this or didn't do that. And when that play is a play kill, you know, it's a play kill where you step to your right, you're trying to reach the guy, you lose him, he falls off underneath, you lose 3 yards. Oh my God, the kid's not playing very well. That's one play. Okay. That's one play. It's not necessarily, if you watch the sum total of his play, he's probably pretty solid, but everybody, you know, every so often is going to lose a battle. So you're looking at something how do they work with the other five guys? What's the consistency in the run and pass game? How does he stack up with the guy that he's playing, that he's competing with? And well, I think at this point, the coach is the best guy to pick that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it from the standpoint of just what the coaches said, just what you know, Jim said. Remember at the beginning before the season, he said, hey, we're going to treat the tackle position like we did the quarterback position. We're going to start one game like he did with Cade last year, and then we're going to start JJ the next game. He said we're going to do the same thing with the tackles, Carson and Miles Hinton, and then he clearly had identified as the guys who were out front in camp. And then he said, you know, Trente and Ladarius, but they haven't done that, right? So what does that say? What does that mean? If you believe that, you know, the run blocking needs some growth, they've been solid, but not up to necessarily last year's standard as a unit, then that would lend itself to, okay, well, let's you know, rotate. But if the pass pro is stellar and it's been really, really good, then they must be well ahead in that category, to the point where it's like, no, let's not rotate. Let's just try to grow it in the composition that we have right now. Again, that's the feel for it based on what they had to say. But you said something earlier that I want you to focus on here. You said the duo busting defense, that teams have adopted a strategy based on what you've seen the first 2 weeks. You feel like there's a strategy that defensive coordinators are going to try to employ to slow Michigan down. What is that strategy?
Well, what you do, first of all, philosophically, is you look at what the other team does the best, try and take that away and make them play left-handed. Okay. And that's what basically defenses are trying to do. It's just not working because McCarthy's playing too well. Okay. And Michigan does have some alternatives. What they're doing, I think, again, I don't have all the answers to this. I just look at all the tape and draw conclusions based on what I see, is UNLV may have these defenses in their package. Probably do. But they're looking at how TCU handled the dual play. They're looking at how ECU handled the dual play. And looking at how best example is Illinois, okay? And what they're doing is they're running defense, and their favorite defense. And we're going to talk about this in the film study, because we did an illustration on this, is to bring people from a double legal defense. What's a double legal defense? That means they've got 2-3 techniques, two guys outside your guards, down guys, and a nose guard head up on your center. And they'll walk a stand-up guy, a fourth lineman who's usually standing up. He's usually not down. They'll walk him up on your tight end, okay? They'll either bring the corner off the backside with all those guys slanting away from that corner to blow up all those gaps, okay? Or slant the other way and bring a nickel or a strong safety with that stand-up guy. Okay, now again, this is a lot of stuff here, but it gives you the idea what's happening. They are trying to eliminate all those gaps, blow up all those gaps with movement, forcing you to now single block all those guys, okay? On the duo play, and the reason it's called the duo, we mentioned this in another one of our programs, is they want double teams. And what Michigan was getting a lot of the year last year was more 4-2 looks or down line, where they could come off and double team up to the second level and move that defensive lineman off the ball so the running back could get in there, see where it was going to open up, and either hit it or cut back or do whatever, but he always had enough movement. Well, now it's getting harder because there's one guy blocking one guy. And whenever there's one guy blocking one guy, it's harder to move him, and there's more margin for error. So that defense is really prevalent. The other one, Sam, is the run-through stuff. And this is what TCU did more than anybody, is they would wait until you would engage the double and instantly run through before the lineman could see the picture and come off and pick him off, okay? Now, you can handle run-throughs. That's not something that should be impossible to deal with, because at least you get a temporary double team. So, but these are ways to keep people from staying on those doubles and making the duo play harder to run. What they would like to do with the duo, Sam, is force the ball to bounce outside. Close all those inside gaps and bounce it to an unblocked player. That way now they can't hit you vertical. You know, they can't hit you vertical, which is what you really like to do in a dual play, is you run the play inside and see the cavity inside the box. You could hit anywhere. But if all those gaps are closed down, now you got to bounce it outside, which is effective too. It can be, but they feel like it's a better answer to than having the play hit between the tackles or tight ends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it speaks to something we talked about last week, and someone just brought this up. Jay Mekhi Fitz, maybe I'm wrong, but I haven't seen any pin and pulls. One of their go-to, I wouldn't say it was the go-to run scheme, is one of them. We haven't seen it because you remember what happened to pin and pulls in the TCU game? Mm-hmm. They blew that stuff up with the run-throughs, right? It leaked too much. Yeah. So it explains why we haven't seen it so far this season, Al.
Yeah, the pin and pulls, again, a little better against stationary defenses. You can handle run-throughs in a pin and pull, but it's not the best scheme for it, okay? Because now sometimes your linemen have to come off their pull and come back and pick them off. That happened in the TCU game, and maybe they're late to trigger. The guy blows in there, and, you know, that's their defense. Anyway, they do it against everybody, so it's not news. But they're not – I won't say that it's a play you throw out versus all this, but it's not near the priority as other plays that you could run to get the ball outside.
Suboptimal, right? Suboptimal.
Yeah,
situation.
Right.
So,
but in answer to that question is no, they have not run a pin and pull. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things they haven't run, but I really believe that they're just keeping in the drawer.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's a really good talking point. Listen, and we're going to get to your questions, like the one Jay McCoff is more like a statement. But if you have questions for Al, we always get to those at the end of the show. So drop them in the comment section right now. I'll start tagging them and have them ready for when we get to the Q&A. But it speaks to thought process for Michigan as a whole, for Sharon specifically as a play caller. When you have this type of team, when you have a quarterback going like he's going, you can hold things back. You can go into a game saying, there are things I want to work, right? So play action passing is, I mean, they're lights out. But as we said at the beginning of the show, Al, he clearly went to this game wanting to work perimeter runs. And so what it sounds like to me for your duo busting strategy, that this is one of the answers. You tell me, play caller, that this is one of the answers that we need to be able to. If teams want to play us like this, we need to have our perimeter run game honed more as a response to that if we need to. Ideally, we keep cracking them inside. We have the type of offensive line when we're gelling that we're going to run all our inside schemes anyway. But if we want to, if we need to, and we want to go to the flanks, we can go to the flanks. Took it to the second half in the TCU game to really start going to it. I think what Sharon was working was like, hey, whenever we want to go to this, we want to be able to go to this and be confident that this is going to be the answer. What say you, Mr. Play Call?
Yeah, and as I said before, the difference is they weren't going to wait until they blew up a few dual plays to go to it. They got after it right away. They ran, I believe, 6 or 7 stretch plays that I counted, and 1 toss, which I haven't seen them do hardly at all. Donovan took a toss, okay? They ran reverse. Okay, and they ran 6 or 7, I believe, 6 counter plays, which are not necessarily an outside play, but it's another way to gap off all that movement, just like you saw a week ago on those 2 power plays. Remember those? Are they outside runs? No, but they allow you to domino block all that movement, and that's good stuff. That's another answer. It's not necessarily in the outside run family, but it's another answer. So you saw more counter, more wide running, and I think because they want to develop it, because it's becoming increasingly obvious that the duo play is a very high priority for people to defend.
Yeah, man, they got JJ on the perimeter in this game. Just a little bit. Got to be judicious with it, right, Al? But they showed it.
I didn't mention that. We're going to telestrate that. It's a cool play. A little bluff counter, or not a counter. It was a bluff play, but I don't think they were reading it. I think it was purely designed for JJ. But it was cleverly schemed. And again, watch the video breakdown, and you'll see. We'll detail that.
All right. So what do you think about the idea, though? You didn't focus specifically on the part about holding things back. Did you hold things back
Yeah, I think everybody is to agree, particularly early in the season when you're playing lesser opponents. You want to believe you can beat them with more basic stuff. If you don't, then you probably aren't as good as you'd hoped. But I haven't seen a sprint pass yet, a pure pocket movement, which I know they have because we broke them down before. Sam, they'll sprint option play and, you know, several different variations. They've only run one naked. They ran a slide play to Bredesen last week, not this week, but last week. Have not seen a screen pass. Have not seen a pure RPO. Okay, now, because this question comes up, we got to kind of re-explain this every year. What's the difference, Sam, between an RPO and a run control? Because I classify them differently. They are both forms of RPOs. They're both in the RPO family. But one is more maintenance. Okay, one of the if you're just throwing a bubble route or what I call a line route where they're blocking in the perimeter and a guy shooting into the flat behind the line of scrimmage, those are basically done. The bubbles a lot of times they're thrown off pre-snap reads. Sometimes post-snap lines are run a little bit more off post-snap, but they're lower maintenance because they're nice short throws. RPO is a little different story. A pure RPO, you are throwing off an add-in defender down the field in some way, shape, or form. Whether it be a quick slant or they take that away, usually you'll give them a little complimentary receiver in a flat. We have not seen RPOs, pure RPOs. We have seen some run control, very little, but some run control. So, again, those are things I think you're going to see more of. I don't know if they're ever going to be a big RPO team. I think if you asked them, based on what I've seen so far, they'd say, well, I'd just rather play pass and let them just – make the fake, watch those guys suck up and take a big bite out of the other team's ass, period. But I think you'll see more of that, okay? And again, pin and pulls, because that's something I wrote down too even before the question is, I think you'll see more pin and pulls because a pin and pull has been a really good play for Michigan ever since Harbaugh's been here. They started again to incorporate more counters into their offense, which there were very few the first week, and that's always been a good play for them too. So from a run game perspective, now one thing they did add that we're going to talk about this will make Joe Simon happy, is option routes. I counted four different forms of either tight end or slot option during the course of the game. Now, he didn't always throw it to the option route, but they were incorporated into the structure of the route, okay, the structure of the pattern. So that's good. That's good stuff because that's stuff you're going to need against good teams, and they got guys that can do it. So
that run up to Tyler Morris wasn't that an option
yes,
route?
It was. Yeah, there was option. I saw the tight end option and slot option one time, and I think we got this on. We're going to show this. I don't think we tell the story, where JJ looked left and all the rush was left into the option route. He couldn't see it. Mm-hmm. He's looking to the option route to Tyler and. His vision got blocked, so he kind of broke, and then ran up and hit a guy right sitting over the top of the ball on a run up throw.
Yeah,
which was but it was and another one he actually hit the option route off the improv, and so it was a factor. I mean, it was a factor. So, and I hope I'm sure we'll see more of that.
Yeah. So it's the fact that we haven't seen a single RPO is the biggest confirmation. As if I didn't. First of all, I've confirmed it. They have held a lot back. you don't need to be an expert observer or have inside intel to know that, but can confirm for the record. Yeah, they're holding a whole lot back, right? But you can see that with the way JJ's playing, as we laid out at the very top, he is on fire. Like the dude is, his decision making, his execution. His leadership, his handling of the increased pre-snap responsibilities, everything is pristine. So every reason to trust him with more RPO, especially when he showed he could execute it last year. That they haven't run a single one is proof positive they're holding stuff back, right? They got that. They have that and a lot of other things on the ready, but these games allow for them to focus on something. We are going to work this perimeter run game. We are going to get this run game home. You say something all the time, Al, that sticks out to me, and it probably rubs fans the wrong way. And I led off my post-game article with this. I was like, Michigan, no matter how good J.J. McCarthy is, and he's outstanding, will be a run-first team. Mm-hmm. It's non-negotiable. It's who they are. So whereas you got some other teams who, when the box is loaded, they're gonna throw off of it 70-80% of the time. That's not Michigan. Not gonna be Michigan. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to run into loaded boxes, and so they're gonna work on running into loaded boxes until they get good at running into loaded boxes. And now, is it always gonna be the case that they do it? No. They want to be versatile enough that they can throw it too and throw it really, really well, but they're going to run that rock out, and that's never going to change.
I'm going to say this, Sam. If whether the box was loaded or not dictated how much you ran the ball, Blake Corum would never touch the ball. He just wouldn't, because the box is loaded so often against Michigan that you could turn it into a passing circus in a Minnesota minute, okay? And that's just not the best use of your personnel, although schematically it may seem like the thing to do, and I think you do need to do some of that, and they certainly have done some of that. But there is a time when the good running teams, as I always say, they're a little hard-headed. They say, we're gonna pound that thing in there, and we're gonna chip at that rock until it cracks, and it may be a few ugly plays in there. I don't care, the fans might boo. Eventually the rock's gonna crack, or they're gonna be playing that thing so damn hard, I'm gonna pull it out and take a bite. So
out of their ass.
Yeah, out of their ass. So I think that it's a hard thing, you know, it's a hard thing to wrap your head around when you know, fans are running the ball up the middle. Why do they keep running the ball up the middle? You know, sometimes there's a purpose there. There's a purpose there. So here's the thing I think I want to just kind of close this part of the conversation with this is, I think they got to crank that run game up. It's got to continue to improve. Because the thing about it, as well as JJ's playing, and he is, God knows, is if the ball isn't run well against some of these better teams, that they're going to put more pressure on him against better guys, and the pass rush is going to start being a factor. It hasn't been a factor yet. But when they're playing Penn State, Ohio State, some of these better teams, and they're not running as well, and you become very quarterback dependent, and as much as he's proven he can deal with that, the best quarterbacks in the NFL with no run game, or at least no threat of a run game, sometimes don't do very well.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So the point I'm making is just they're not doing bad. They're broke. I just continue to develop and don't give up on it, because that's your style of play. Okay. So that's I think how they got to think.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's get into the your grades. And by the way, if you have questions for Al, put them in the comments. We will get to them after Al goes through his breakdown as far as the grading of the offense in week two. Break them down, Al.
Well, I went through I'll start with the O-line. The O-line did not have a lot of minuses, okay? And you could say, oh, they don't run the ball well. If you give them anything better than a C, you're not – well, they did pass the ball well. So you got to give him credit for that, particularly in light of the people, the fact that people are overkilling, stopping their run. So I gave him a B minus to C plus. Again, I don't think they're the standard yet, but they weren't bad because they're giving a quarterback an opportunity to execute the alternative to shoving dual plays up their butt, right? So I can't say they're playing poorly. They're not playing their best, but they're not playing poorly. The wide receivers, I gave a B. They got a little better on the perimeter blocking. They still have a little ways to go there, but they've been consistent. There hasn't been a lot of drop balls. The plays that should have been made were made. So I think that's been good. I gave the tight ends an A. I thought the tight ends played really good. I think the tight ends are very good players, and they're being used well, and they were consistent blocking. Harbaugh's offense is awesome. It's tight end heaven. Those kids have died and gone to tight end heaven because they get to block, they get to catch, they get to do it all. So it's kind of neat. And I can't give McCarthy anything but an A. I gave him an A minus last week. I gave him an A. I just don't – he's just not getting any bad grades. When I rate him, bad throw, bad footwork, late throw, those were easy to do a year ago. If I wanted to be nitpicky with JJ last year, he wouldn't have graded better than a B in any game. But this year, different player. The balls are coming out on time. The decision-making is good. He's checking the ball down when it needs to be checked down. He's taking it down the field. He's mechanically running, executing the run game. And I think and presents a running threat, which he did with a quarterback draw and a little bluff play where he took the ball around the edge. I mean, the kid is on schedule. On schedule with change. he's really done well. So I thought it was a pretty solid performance for the most part. Just got to get that run game going.
What about back the standard? What about the running backs?
Running backs, I gave them a B. I thought Donovan was a little impatient on a couple of outside runs, on one outside run. But Blake was Blake. Had 80 yards, I think, in 15 carries. Like to see him get 100, when I get to the bitterness suite, I'm going to talk about that a little bit. But they were good. I didn't see any issues in pass protection, but I gave them a B.
All right, so let's get to your bitter and sweet, and then we'll get to the questions.
Well, like I said, the run game, and in particular continuing to develop the outside runs, because they're still not where they need to be, and I'd like to see them get a running back 100 yards. Somehow somebody gets, by this time that was a non-factor, but it'll get them fired up, get them going. Donovan Edwards had 6 carries for 9 yards, and he's a better player than that. And anytime you're a player like that's not getting the kind of yards you think he is, you got to start looking at what you're doing or what he's doing or both. Okay. And see if schematically you can't, the good players, I learned this, watching Jerry Rice. They got to touch the ball early in a game and touch it enough where they don't get frustrated. Because if they get frustrated, you can lose them, And he's got to share carries with Corum, but he's a good receiver too. So there's ways to work him, okay? And that's something I think. They didn't get a short yardage play because they didn't get a movement, and that was disappointing. But other than that, not bad in terms of the bitter. The sweet was, I just love, they're getting great production on third down. And again, either the quarterback hitting a structural route or improving, moving defenders and throwing the ball after the fact to keep the chains moving. The downfield shots continue to break the heart of the defense. And not always necessarily taking the downfield shots in this game, but even the checkdowns hurt them. So, and that's a lot about the decision-making of the quarterback. And he's doing a great job with that, okay? Seeing those checkdowns. They ran a reverse, which they got it on tape. Every time, it'll be a new reverse next time. Won't be the same reverse, but it sure was good to see that. And it's another way to get the ball outside, okay, to a wide receiver. And the addition of some option routes, as I mentioned before, I thought that was cool. They were very productive, either, again, structurally or with improv. But I think it's a real cool part of your offense that you can use on any down and distance, whether it's third down and 6 or first down and 10. And they got kids that can run it. But it was just great to see that concept used because I know it's another one. I knew they had it in their book because I'd seen them run it before. But they broke that out. So more sweet than bitter, but still some things to fix. So.
All right, Al, can you hear me? I kind of got a little frozen there. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Can you hear me? Yeah, I'm frozen. We'll try to get that worked out while we get to the questions. I'm going to send you on the solo screen while I work my camera issues out. In the meantime, in between time, let's go ahead and get to the first question. If you have questions for Al, put them in the comments right now. So, Al, you kind of addressed this already, but Ralph Melvin wants to know, what about the offensive line, Al, so far as run blocking? You kind of touched on that already, but specifically, where would you, you know, how improved do you think they can get?
This incarnation. Yeah, they got some good players in there. It's just a matter of time before they gel. Remember, it's about chemistry. And this is another problem, Sam, when you talk about rotating guys to find out who the best player is. That's good deal and all. But with the line, that is one less game that the five that you want to play with will be playing together. And early in the season, I'm betting this is part of why they haven't done it, is they want those five to get used to playing with each other, communicating with each other, making the calls, doing all this stuff. So that, you know, in the future games, that they're all on the same page with some consistency. So, but I think the offensive line is talented and will be fine before it's all said and done.
All right, Al, let's go ahead and get to another question here. This gets to another question about the offensive line. The more I think about the offensive line, the more worried I get. Taking a bunch of transfers, moving a guy from left tackle to right tackle, below average performance against group of five teams. These are all signs of disaster. Seems to me to be a lot of hyperbole there, Al Borges.
Yeah, I wouldn't jump off a bridge just yet. I'd like to see him more productive against the lesser teams. I mean, there is a point made there, but this is when I worry, Sam, if a guy doesn't look capable, you know what I mean? Because I've had that now. I've had guys that were rookies in there that shouldn't been playing yet, should have played in 2 years or should have, whatever. And then if the guy's not capable and you got these same issues, you got potential disaster. But these five, and not just these five, but add Ladarius Henderson, add Trent Jones, and other kids in there, look very capable to me. So, and I know the Sherrone Moore will coach him. I think they'll get better. To me, it's not a concern. But people have to understand that there's an overkill to stop the run against Michigan because of what they did a year ago. New players compounded by that overkill equals growing pains. That's the bad news. The good news is the slack is being picked up by the guy who takes snaps. So as long as that happens, you can keep winning.
All right, let's go ahead and get to this one. He actually asked this question twice. Arapaima, excuse me if I said your name wrong. Sam, he actually asked you this too later, Al. Is JJ a first-round pick this year? I just talked to some agents every week, and yes. Yes. The question is how high? How high a first-round pick is the
question? As high as high gets. I mean, I think he's got as much – NFL skill set as the guy at USC. I do. And he won a Heisman Trophy. Again, he's not featured quite as much because SC is going to air it out more, but that doesn't mean anything to me.
And they aren't worried about protecting their defense at all.
No, they don't care. That's exactly right. So, when I started way back in coaching, we would rate quarterbacks using John Elway as the barometer. I think I talked about this with you before. John Elway was really physically, in so many ways, the consummate quarterback. He had the size, right? He was 6'4". Well, JJ's what, 6'3" or something?
Yeah, right there.
Had mobility, incredible mobility. Could move and throw on the run. That box checks, right? Okay. Was very accurate. Okay. He could hit the target, could throw the ball. He could throw from the ball from one into the field to the other. That pretty much applies. Was tough, very tough guy. Would stand in there and make throws even when the protection wasn't ideal. I see the same thing in him. And had leadership in a clutch. JJ has shown that. Even in their loss a year ago to TCU, he was battling and still making plays, okay? Yeah. Even after some bad fortune early in the game. So I'm not saying JJ's John Elway. I'm not saying he's not, because he has some of the same qualities that Elway has. Now, he still has to mature as a core. There's so many factors still. When I, like I said, we can't anoint him just yet, but he has first-round draft pick skill set. I've had three of them, and he's as good, if not better, from that perspective, as all of those guys.
You know, Neuheisel, after the game, said, man, this dude reminds me of Joe Burrow. Mm-hmm. And when they asked JJ about it after the game, he said, that's who I compare. That's who I model after. And, you know, it's ironic that I inadvertently made a Joe Burrow comparison when we were talking about that TCU game, when we were talking about that, you know, he threw that out off a hitch step and not a plant throw. Mm-hmm. And the very next, must've been the very next week, but they were playing Buffalo in the AFC title game. And Joe Burrow throws it off a plant throw, and it's the same coverage, and he nails it, right? Not even thinking about that's who JJ might be, but JJ said, yeah, that's basically who I'm patterning myself after. And Neuheisel, longtime head coach, quarterback guy, said, man, I see Joe Burrow all over there. I think Joe Burrow's second best quarterback. I know, ignore week one performance, which he was terrible, but how mobile he is, how tough he is, because he's got the hell beat out of him first couple of years, and his ability to process coverages on the run and make accurate throws, man, I think that dude he's outstanding. Only guy better than him than me is Pat Mahomes.
Yeah, Pat Mahomes is a magic man. He's a different kind of quarterback. Not completely different, but a little bit different. But, yeah, I think that's a pretty good comparison. And I think, again, I don't know how fast Joe Burrow is, but if you put two of them on a line and race 40 yards, I'd put my money on JJ.
Yeah, didn't one of your guys coach Burrow at LSU? One of your guys?
Steve Ensminger, yeah. Steve Ensminger was with me at Auburn. I don't see a ton of difference. I think it's a good comparison. You know, again, you don't want to throw too many roses out there, but because it tends to be the kiss of death. But right now, the thing that I'm so encouraged by is the difference between his play a year ago, which wasn't bad, just was not refined. But it's much more refined now, and he still has the same skill set.
Yeah.
If not better. Okay, so we'll see.
Yeah, he a follow-up from our primer. He said, what would it take for JJ to win the Heisman Trophy? I think he has to be lights out against Penn State and Ohio State.
Yeah, high profile games.
Because he won't have his stats won't compare to those other guys. Stat wise, it won't.
So. No. But that's unfair. But in the past, the Heisman, there's been guys whose stats didn't compare, and they still gave the Heisman to him. Yeah, he has to play well in the big games, win the national championship. Of course, they pick it before the national championship game. But if you can see, if you're on track for that type of play and you're playing well in big games before they all vote, you know, I think he could win the Heisman. I think he's without a doubt a strong candidate. If he keeps playing like he's been playing.
Yeah. Here's one from David Betts. Al, if JJ is playing so well, might opposing defenses abandon this duo killing defensive style, or do they just let JJ kill them on play action? Good question.
Well, they can abandon it, but they'll get the ball shoved up their butt. If they try and play stationary defense on Michigan and allow them to double team, you're not going to have any trouble finding a 100-yard rusher. They have to do what they do to stop the primary weapon Michigan has shown in the past and force JJ to play well. That's what every defense is going to say. There's more components to throwing a pass, catching it, and run with it than there is taking the ball and just running it straight downhill. Defenses from day one are taught we must stop the run. If we don't stop the run, we ain't beating anybody, and that's probably true. So you can hit and miss and guess a few times. Say, okay, they're going to play pass this time. I think this last team did that once in a while. They played a couple two-robber defenses on early downs, but you keep that up too much, you're going to get beat. They're gonna run the ball on you.
Yeah. This next one is I'm going to kind of group two questions in one, so I'll put both up on the screen. From Darren. Darren talks ball. He said, how do you get Donovan going? What do you see holding him back? Blank name says more specifically is Donovan Edwards is struggling running in a load of boxes. I guess, Al, to set this up further, I don't think this is just about Donovan. I think it's, you know, you get back to the offensive line and we were talking about gelling. But it makes me think of a scenario with you, Al, because it is clear. Harbaugh made clear. I remember one of the press conferences, maybe several of the press conferences, where Jim was talking about making sure everyone eats, make sure everyone eats. And he would always start off with saying, making sure if Blake gets 20 carries, Donovan gets 20 carries, knowing that you are probably not going to be that exact match, but emphasizing the need to make sure there's equal time. And through two games, Blake Corum has 30 touches. Donovan Edwards has 27. They are making a concerted effort to make sure that there is balance in usage. Here's my question to you, Al. Because running back more than any other position, for a lot of guys, I think is a rhythm-based decision. So one of the differences that I see with Blake is, with Blake, his touches, a lot of them tend to be consecutive. Like he'll get two or three carries in a row, not two or three consecutive plays, but he'll get two or three touches in the row. As far as the offense, maybe it's he caught a pass on that flood route. He's going to get a carry. He's going to get some touches in succession. Donovan doesn't get that quite as much. So I ask you this question from the standpoint of a guy who had Cadillac Williams and Ronnie Brown on an undefeated team. Both guys wound up being first-round draft picks. You know, how much do you have to think about things like that? It's clear that they're thinking about making sure both guys get X number of touches.
Mm-hmm.
How much do they also have to think about, okay, do I have to scheme rhythm too?
Yeah, that can be tough, particularly now the games are getting shorter, right, because of the rules. But there is an answer to that, you know. And they're trying desperately to do it, you know. They're not running the ball as well, which is hurting them a little bit. But what we did, and I had to screw this up before I got it straight, is I had talked to Ronnie Brown about coming back his senior year instead of, you know, coming out in the draft and such. And one of the things I wanted him to know is that we were going to use him because Cadillac Williams was there and Cadillac Williams was the featured back. And, you know, it's easy to get lost in that. But we decided that we're going to have him play some fullback or be the other back in there. Okay. Not necessarily all fullback skill set stuff, but be the other back. We played a game. He touched the ball 7 times the first game. And I said, oh my God, that is some bad coaching. That's a bad coaching. That's totally my fault. So what I did is I talked to him. I said, Ronnie, that ain't happening again. Okay. Not because I want to make you happy as much as I want to win. And if you're touching the ball 7 times, and this would probably be carryover with Donovan too, well, it doesn't give us as good a chance to win, right? So what we did is we put a package up, Ronnie Brown package, that was centered around him doing a variety of things, whether it was playing fullback, whether it was playing wide receiver. We stuck him in there tight end a little bit. We put him in motion a lot. We just had, you know, 15 different variations of how Ronnie could touch the ball. And we committed to it. We said, we're going to do this. And then every third series, we would move him into halfback. So we knew that he could get some rhythm now, okay? He was not going to always be the fullback, always, because – well, what this did is it was a gold mine for us and a bigger gold mine for Ronnie, because he got featured as a receiver as well as a running back, okay? He ended up – his Cadillac, I think, had like 1,300 yards. Ronnie had almost 900 yards, but he had 38, 39 catches. So that just with the NFL, they're going, holy smoke, who is this guy? He can catch, he can run, he can block, he can do everything. He did it all, you know, because we'd have him. I asked him, I said, Ronnie, once in a while, you got to do some dirty work. You're going to have to go in and block somebody every so often. So they don't know every time we stick you at fullback, it's going to be we're releasing you for a pass. But it was something that we had to give a lot of thought to every week. And before we left the room for our game plan, we looked at the Ronnie Brown package and made sure that there were plenty of opportunities in there where he was going to touch the ball. And I'll bet you they do something very similar. It would be my guess.
Yeah, their touches are too close for that not to be a focus, right? They are making sure that these guys get equal play, right? And here's, let's also remember, neither of these guys have played the fourth quarter yet. So there will be more touches as they get in the tougher competition. They play more of the game. But this other part of the thinking, this is why I wanted to ask you this question, you know, is that something that you have to think about as a play caller? I got to try to establish rhythm here too, in addition to the touches. And it sounds like you guys had a remedy for that. And I imagine this is the kind of ongoing thing with winning being the most important. It's not just, hey, I got to keep this guy happy. It's like, what gives us the best chance for Donovan to do what Donovan did at the end of last season, right? How do we get him on that track? And Blake too, because neither guy is where he was at the end of last year yet, as far as their rhythm is concerned. Blake Corum is not getting tackled in the open field. I'm sorry, it's not happening. By UNLV? Oh, hell no. And Blake said as much after the game, without disrespecting UNLV, he was like, I'm back, I'm 100% healthy, but I'm not back to me yet. And I think he had to be thinking of that play where he gets outside, he's one-on-one in the open field, and dude makes a tackle. That doesn't happen to Blake Corum.
Not often. Not often. But it happens to anybody once in a while, but it ain't going to happen with any consistency.
Yeah. So they'll get on track. And I, knowing Sharone and Mike, you know, this is the kind of thing that I'm sure, because this is not a problem. You got to understand this about Donovan. Team guy. Like, you know, he's not, for as much as fans might think, oh, we got to keep him happy. Even if he gets frustrated, he's not going to ever make it about him. That's just not who he is as a guy. So they're winning. They're a tight team. You know, I think for him and for them, it's all about, all right, how can we get both of these guys going to the level we got them going last year to help the team? Mm-hmm. So when they face Penn State and Ohio State, more so than, oh, we got to keep them happy. So let's move on to the next question. This is a really interesting question, Al. This is from Brian Block, who asks, is RPO, quote, too expensive, unquote, to run when they can just play action? RPO takes a lot of practice time. Most teams that run RPO, it's most of their offensive scheme. What do you make of that? What's your response to that question?
That's just an excellent question. I mean, that's a great question. RPOs are expensive. Let's start with that now. They are expensive. Now, most guys who run a lot of RPOs will tell you it's worth the expense. And most teams that run a lot of RPOs don't run as much play action as you're seeing Michigan do in the first couple games. What's the advantages, disadvantages? That's where you got to start. One is it does take a lot of training with a quarterback, but it does exploit loaded boxes with the option to run or pass into that loaded boxes based on how they react. Disadvantages, it's very difficult to determine what your run-pass ratio is going to be because you don't know what that reaction is going to be. So the ball could be given, the ball could be thrown, and you may be taking carries away from a guy you want to have the ball, okay? With play passes, now, because the linemen don't go downfield but just sell the run, and I should have mentioned this with the RPOs, the ball has to come out fast. So you can't throw a lot of balls way down the field like you can on a play pass. On a play action pass now, you can sell the run, which Michigan does a wonderful job of, and take big bites. Now the defense is paying much more for their aggressiveness than they do on RPOs, okay, because you're running deep break-ins and dagger routes with posts and all kinds of stuff where the ball's going down the field, and they still got to play your run game just like they did on the RPO. So I think a mixture of both is a good deal, but to say that you can get good at both of those, maybe that's a good question. Maybe you do need to temper one or the other. But if I was Michigan, I would lean more to the play actions and a little less to the RPOs, knowing that there'd still be some RPOs.
Yeah, this was a very, very – there are more I know that there are big questions. All right, so one more. We'll squeeze one more in. Apologize that I can't get to all of them. We're trying to keep this tighter to an hour, right? So here is one from Marty Lynn. How big a difference will Harbaugh being on the sideline make for in-game adjustments, you think, Al?
Oh, I don't know. I don't really know how their dynamic works, but I would guess that in most instances, the coaches are making the in-game adjustments, and Jim will just basically tell them, hey, he may suggest something here and suggest something there, but he's trying to manage the football game. Okay, he's got a lot of other things and motivate the football team when things are good and bad. So I think most of those adjustments are still made by the assistant coaches. I just think the head coach's presence makes a hell of a difference. Not so much in these last games. I don't know if it really did in these games, but when you start getting into the big ones, you know, the red letter games, the Penn States and Ohio States, the Michigan State, now I think his presence is a factor, a huge factor, because they want to see, they want, the team takes on the personality of the coach, the head coach. And if the head coach isn't there, it's easy to lose your way. So I think him coming back here in the next couple of weeks will play a big part in their success.
Absolutely. All right, folks, we're going to wrap it there because we got to get over to the film study to kind of give you the schedule. I've amended it to try to fit everything in after a week. So live with Devin on Monday, live with Al at noon on Tuesday, live with Vance at 5:30 on Tuesday, right? And then we go with the film studies starting. We get all the film studies up on Wednesday. So from now on, all film studies go up on Wednesday. Then Wednesday evening, that's when we jump into the discussion with Devin Gardner, Daniel Horton, and I. We debuted last week, the Steady Dropping Dimes. We'll do week two. A lot to talk about around college football. Of course, there's Mel Tucker. Of course, there's Coach Prime. Of course, there's Texas going into Alabama, knocking them down. You got the NFL slate where
– We got the Lions.
Damn, the Lions, Sam. The Leos. You're damn right. We're going to talk about the Lions.
I love those Lions.
We're going to talk about how they beat San Francisco.
Gun.
I talked to Brian Greasy in the summer about Brock Purdy. The Niners look every bit as good as we thought they were going to look. Eagles struggled a little bit, but you know they're going to be there. And I think it's Dallas and Detroit for that next team in the mix. So we'll get into all of that on Steady Dropping Dimes. That'll be Wednesday night. Look for it on your lives. In the meantime, in between time, Al and I got to get over, get this film study recorded. Want to thank all of you for your support for this broadcast and the film study, which we don't make any money on. We don't
advertise. Don't even think it.
Right. So, you know, all those network hawks that come after folks who use the video, we only use it for the entertainment of our audience, right?
Our audience, right?
So, but if you want to support that effort, you can do so. We're going to put the PayPal fundraiser link for the film studies with Al Borges right here in the comments. Be sure to click that if you want to help support that effort. Until the next time, folks, thanks for watching another edition of the Michigan Football Breakdown, focused on the offense with Al Borges.
Go Blue.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the Chi?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the side. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes now streaming. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with the Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. The subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.